Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Yeah, you sound like you're adapting to the new time zone very well. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, this is the easy one. This is when you go out and then you have to be on for 7:30 instead of 5:30. It's an absolute blessing. But next week we're going to Vegas, and we lose the hour. Actually, what are you doing next week? Can you come and host the morning show?
That sounds delightful. Many hours are lost in Las Vegas, so that wouldn't be. Time is irrelevant there, correct? So
it is. Yeah.
Yeah, the lights will be at the same level. They make sure you don't know what time it is.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, we're really pumped for it. We're really looking forward to that aspect of the trip.
I think you guys will be just fine.
Yeah, we'll be just fine. We went on a nice little tour of Fenway Park yesterday. Amazing facility. And Warner, because part of the tour, they were talking about how in as recent as 1999, with ownership and everything being what it is, there was thought, well, we're going to have to tear this down and build a new stadium. And everybody's, whoa, no, you can't do that. But that was the era that we were in, that we are in. Just knock it down, build a new one. And thank goodness that somebody came to their senses, probably the new ownership, and poured $300 million into that building. But to think that was potentially going to be gone is hard to believe.
Well, it's small, right? And it's the way people expect to be treated at sporting events now in terms of kind of amenities. It's, that one in Wrigley obviously have survived. And they're both great places to watch a ball game, although kind of cramped places actually to watch a ball game. But it is, there's an that idea of sitting and watching a ball game in the same place where, the legends of the past played, looking at the same field, is like, that's really cool. But, it wasn't enough to save Tiger Stadium or Comiskey Park, and ones that weren't, I think Tiger Stadium was every bit the equal of those two places. Comiskey was a dump. But, they kind of surrendered to the idea, well, we've got to have these concessions, and we have to have this much space on the concourse, and we need private boxes for the revenue, and all of those things. And you've seen it in Boston. Like, the footprint of that stadium is tiny, right? It tucks into a little tiny spot. It's not like there's stuff around it. But as much as I hate many things about the Red Sox, I do love the ballpark, and because it's an experience. If you love baseball, it's part of baseball and history, which is going to take us pretty much to where we're about to go conversationally here anyway. But baseball is a lot of what people appeals to people about baseball is continuity, is the sense that that every season kind of blends into the next season, and that it's kind of an unbroken line back to Babe Ruth and beyond, right? That it's you're part of something that's not product as so much as culture. And, if you're a ball fan, you love that kind of stuff.
Well, like you said, speaking of baseball, there's something about the play-by-play voice of a baseball broadcaster, or any, I suppose. Well, a guy like Vin Scully, when you turned it on, you knew what sport you were listening to, you knew who you were listening to, automatically what team you would have been listening to. And another one of those guys is... It's making news today. I'll let you tell the people.
Yeah, it was announced about 2 minutes ago, I think. That Jerry Howarth, the longtime voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, one of only two guys who called play-by-play for that team as the kind of the official play-by-play voice, is stepping down. He will not call. He has called his last Blue Jays game, and I think that's going to come as a surprise to a lot of people. Jerry's done 36 plus years with the Jays. Ooh. And it's not just baseball play-by-play, but especially baseball play-by-play on radio. It is not. There's nothing else like it because, 162 games plus spring training plus in a good year the postseason, 3-hour games during which there are 35 minutes of action. it's baseball meanders and there's a lot of open space, and the pacing of it is unlike anything else. So it's great to have a great home run call. And, of course, Jerry has a signature home run call. But what you really have to do is kind of build this relationship with your audience by telling stories. And, there's kind of a gentle, subtle art to it that, you can't be overbearing. You're going to spend a lot of time with people, and you're going to spend time with them year after year after year. And it's more intimate than anything else I can think of in broadcasting. And I got to tell you, there have been great broadcasters otherwise who could not do baseball. You know, and everybody can run through their Rolodex here and kind of figure out who I'm talking about. But there are people who are very, very good at other things who, when you put them down trying to do baseball, and especially baseball on radio, they had no clue. Mm-hmm. So, Jerry, you know, I think for a lot of people, you know, a lot of people, Jerry Howard's the only, play-by-play guy they know.
Sure.
You know, he's their entire lives. And, you know, in the entire history of the franchise, there's only two guys, him and Tom Cheek, the late Tom Cheek, which is amazing for 40 years. But this, you know, this summer is, it's going to be different this year because it's not going to be Jerry there. And I think, you know, people kind of adjust to players coming and going and managers coming and going, and you kind of assume that, you know, even your favorite guys might leave town. But it's funny, that, you know, the broadcaster, and we, you know, you think of guys like Scully or like, you know, Ernie Harwell, or the, you know, the kind of guys who had those long careers associated with one team. You know, Jerry's on that list. He's, you know, if you're a Blue Jays fan, is you look, I'll tell you what, every Blue Jays fan can do a half-baked Jerry Howarth impression. Because they've been hearing that voice, you know, that voice. And I say something, and it's not like it's front of mind sometimes. You know, baseball on the radio is a background thing. A lot of the time in summer, it's you're doing something else, or you're sitting on a dock, or you're driving in your car. And it could be a great season, or it could be a lousy season. It could be a great game or a nothing game. But there's a sense of constancy there, you know, because there's so many games and there's so many hours that, you know, those people become part of your life.
And what was great about, because you'll have the indelible sound of that broadcaster. The one thing about Jerry is he just sounded like a nice guy. He just sounded so pleasant and warm and wouldn't say a bad word about someone. He just had that feel to him that you knew he was just a nice guy.
Well, and that's what you need, right? That's who you, because who do you want? You don't want to hang out with somebody who's not a nice guy. You know, I know it's corny, but, you know, Jerry always came out and said, hello, friends.
Yeah.
But that's the relationship. You know, that's, you want somebody you want to hang with. And you know, the funny thing is, say Jerry's a nice guy, but I'll tell you something. He knows more about the team he's calling than anybody. He's a guy who puts in a ton of hours talking to people, you know, and picking up bits of information. And he has as incisive a baseball mind as anybody I know. But he's not going to let that overwhelm the broadcast. You know, like, Jerry knows what's going on, you know, and he knows who's good and who's bad, and he knows, you know, if the manager's on the ropes or if there's trouble in the clubhouse and all that stuff. He knows that. And, you know, if in other kind of situations, you know, we have him on the radio in Toronto sometimes on Jeff Blair's show, man, he has opinions. But he understands that doing that job, it's not about him. You know, you don't push yourself in front of the game, and it's not about hot takes. It's the opposite. That, you know, you're part of the rhythm of baseball. You're part of the rhythm of the game. And, again, you have this kind of comfortable, friendly, intimate relationship with the people who are out there in radio land. And that you need to maintain that. You know, it's funny. I've seen people meet Jerry for the first time, you know, people who only know him as a radio voice. And it's a funny one because they come up to him like he's their pal, you know, like he's been their pal for 30 years.
Yeah.
And, of course, he doesn't know them from Adam. And, you know, he's one of those guys who in person is more gracious and less perfunctory than, you know, than a lot of famous people. He, you know, he notes names and he remembers things, and he's an incredibly polite man. But it's, you know, people feel like they know him, and you understand why.
You noted it, just the art of calling baseball. I mean, this is a storyteller's craft, whereas you think of a sport like hockey, there's no room for any of that. Was that what made Jerry special, that in a year where they might only win 70 times, that he'd be able to tell you a great story about a kid at spring training coming up to the plate for the first time? I mean, there would have been some years that felt like death marches for Jerry between, you know, the early 90s and just 3 years ago when they finally got back to the postseason.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. You know, that, you know, like hockey play-by-play is kind of, you know, is a different kind of performance. You know, I spent a bunch of time with Bob Cole the last couple of years doing his book, and we, you know, kind of tried to dissect what that is. And that, you know, that's, it's immediate, and you're conveying emotion with your voice, and it's kind of the flow of the game you're trying to, and it's more, you know, it's a kind of acting that in itself is really difficult because the game doesn't stop, and there. There aren't a lot of stops, and you have to anticipate things, and it's really tricky. And baseball is kind of the flip side of that, where there are big pauses, big empty spaces, and you say, and entire seasons can be, you know, you can know pretty much by the end of April if a season's not going anywhere, and yet you still have another 140 games to call. So you know, it's so you do tell stories, and you kind of try and convey information about the players, and you become part of that lazy kind of summer rhythm of people's lives. So it doesn't, it's not life and death. You know, like how many ball games feel like life and death? You know, they, in the playoffs, yeah, we're in September in the pennant race, but they come and go, right? And there'll be a game tomorrow. There's always a game tomorrow. And that's the, you know, like a guy like Jerry, you know, you think of Scully. Scully used to do games on radio. I don't know how many people actually listened to him that much. You probably heard him on TV a lot, but you know, he didn't have a color man. He just, yeah. It was just him. And so he just, it was like one long story where occasionally baseball would break out. That's the, you know, that's the art of it. It's, I say, it's not like anything else. I don't, I'm not sure what else you can compare it to. But, you know, really, is this, you know, radio came to be in the early part of the 20th century. Baseball was already established in the 19th century. This is really how sports broadcasting began. And I would guess, you know, who knows what those broadcasts sounded like. But I'm guessing it hasn't changed that much in 100 years.
Yeah, for those just tuning in, Jerry Howarth, play-by-play voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, announcing his retirement earlier this hour after 36 seasons behind the mic of the Blue Jays, has called his last game. The thing that's always interesting, too, and there's always extenuating circumstances that might prevent something from happening, but Vin Scully got his last season to kind of do a farewell tour. That won't be the case for him. I don't know which one's better.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, like, it would have been... Like, I'm not sure Jerry would have been comfortable with the whole kind of farewell tour thing. You know, the reason he's not, my understanding is the reason he's pulling the plug now is that it's, and I know people probably know he had some pretty serious health concerns the last year, but this isn't about that as far as I know. It's about, he's also had some issues with his voice. You know, he missed a ton of games last year with a kind of chronic laryngitis, and I think my understanding is he just decided his voice wasn't up to 162. And if he couldn't do 162, then he wasn't doing the job. Mm. So, you know, it's not as ominous as, you know, some people might read into this today, because considering that, you know, Jerry's talked about his battle with prostate cancer, you know, and he's been very forthright about that, and it's been great. He's educated some people. But this is about the pipes, you know, and so I think he thinks he can't do the job right, so he's not going to do it. I'm sure there will be a million Jerry tributes in the, you know, the next little while. I've got a big piece that probably is up on sportsnet.ca right now, and I know Jeff Blair has written one as well, and I'm sure there will be stuff, you know, at the Rogers Center this year. There'll be a Jerry night for sure, you know that. But yeah, the other thing is, I'm not sure Jerry would have been the guy to do the farewell tour. It's not, you know, that's not his nature really.
Boy, that's a big set of shoes, and probably two sets of shoes if you look about it, the big picture here for someone to come in here, because Tom Cheek was a legend before Jerry was, the touch 'em all Joe, and dare we speculate, or do we just say that this is clearly going to have to be a fantastic human and broadcaster?
Yeah, they are big shoes, you know, and I don't think there's any, I think it's wide open right now, because I don't think anybody saw this coming up until the last few days. You know, I think up until the last few days, everybody figured Jerry would be at spring training. So this comes as a bit of a surprise, but they are. It's a big job. You know, there's a ton of interest in this team right now, and you know that it's you know, you think, you know, radio is, you know, you think it's all about TV and people watching games on TV, but radio and baseball, a lot of people still do listen to baseball on radio. And, you know, because you've only had these two voices for the entire history of a franchise, yeah, I'm not sure what it's going to be like for someone else. And I'm not sure what it's going to be like to hear someone else there. Just, you know, we haven't. So it'll be different. It'll be different. And I guess that'll take some getting used to for all of us.
Stephen Brunt joining us here on Boomer and Warner in the Morning. I guess quickly thoughts on what's happening in South Korea. We got some gold, we got some medals, things are going pretty well, so some good stories already as we're just a few days in.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of starting to roll a little bit, you know, in terms of I think that there was that natural lag at the beginning of these games, kind of snuck up on people, bad time zones, no NHL players. But it kind of feels like the last 48 hours, things have started to roll a bit. And, you know, when Mikael Kingsbury getting the gold medal in moguls, and, you know, he's won every race in the last 2 years, he should get that. And then our curlers, you know, whatever happens in hockey, it's always worth, I know I don't have to tell you guys this, but in this part of the country, I have to tell people occasionally, you know, we are every bit as much a curling nation as we are a hockey nation. And I'm not sure how I feel about this mixed doubles thing. It's kind of I find it a bit odd to watch. Although mm-hmm. I did kind of enjoy watching the bickering Swiss team yesterday yelling at each other. that kind of jives with my experiences in Switzerland when I was over there covering stuff. They were unpleasant. So that figures that I know they're neutral, but they yell at each other. And I think we're starting to roll here, and the hockey tournament's about to happen. And it's weird waking up in the morning and finding out what happened the night before and missing a bunch of stuff. But it's not perfect. But I think these will feel like an Olympics, you know, 15 days from now or whenever it is that it ends.
Good stuff, buddy. Appreciate it. We'll catch up on Friday when we will be back in our studio.
Okay. And, well, you guys look after yourselves there. You know, don't.
And I want to apologize.
If you're in a different country, stuff could happen.
I want to apologize for that really dominating conversation this segment.
Tough to get a word in.
Yeah, is he napping there? What's going on? Catching a few Z's?
I should be napping.
Would have been a better move if he did. The contribution would be the same. He'd be more well rested. Any must-dos before we leave Boston, Rhett, Steven?
Yeah, Rhett was schmoozing clients last night. He was working late last night.
There are different ways to earn your keep, and I'm sure in some way he has.
I've done my best, Steven, and that's all I can ask.
Yeah, sometimes you got to play hurt, my friend.
Jeez.
And he's very hurt. There's no question.
Is he playing?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Passing.
Sorry, you were asking about...
I don't know how much time you spent in Boston, Steven, but we got another, I'd say, 36 hours here before we disappear.
Yeah, Daisy Buchanan's was always my favorite bar. I think it's still going.
Closed.
Oh.
Is it gone?
It's gone.
Oh, geez. Okay, well, I don't have a second great bar in Boston.
All right, good.
All right.
Thanks, Steven.
Sorry, man. That's it.
That's all right.
Okay.
Take care.
I'm sure you'll find something.
We'll talk to you Friday.
Okay. See you, boys.